apologies for the abbreviated shiur. How did you get, how far did you guys get in the Maamar Kamos? So, the Gemara in Ksubis, did you get to that at all? Alright, so maybe we'll try to do that together as part of the plan. This will be a little more efficient. So, we had tried to understand what are the klalim when it comes to Rov and when not. When do we follow Rov? When do we not? There are Gemaras that seem to give us vastly different impressions. And on the one hand, we saw when it comes to Din and Nefashos, so we find indications that we do follow Rov, and we find some indications, at least for Pikuach Nefesh, that we don't follow Rov. So we follow Rov as far as Bez Din is concerned, to Haskin somebody's Chayiv Misa, or we follow Rov to establish that somebody who was killed was not a Trefer, or was somebody who was hit was the father of the one being hit, of hitting him. So there, for Dinei Nefashos, we do follow Rov. But the Gemara says that for Pikuach Nefesh, to be Mechal Shabbos, or to eat on Yom Kippur, to save a life, so that we would do, even if it's only a miut, that it's a sakano, or a miut that this will help, we still do it. Some explain the distinction, by the way, as saying that when there is a mitzvah, so then we know the mitzvah has to apply, at least in some circumstances, so then we assume that Rov is effective for that purpose. So if there's a mitzvah, for example, of Ubiarta Rav Mikirbecha, if Beis Din has an obligation to impose justice, so then that has to function, and apparently there's got to be a system that follows Rov. But if we're talking about where there is no such mitzvah, and instead the mitzvah that is really relevant is pikuach nefesh, so then we're not going to follow Rov to say, don't do this. We're going to be choshish to the miyut, and we're going to pursue the life-saving option. And when it comes to mamonis, we find also some mixed messages, because we have a machlokes, whether we say holcha mamonach or harov, Rav Shmuel, but we seem to follow the opinion that ein holchen b'mamonach harov. And that's surprising for a few reasons. One reason I haven't focused on, but just to throw this into the mix, but it's also important background, is that the Gemara does say that as a general klal, ruba v'chazaka, ruba adif. Maybe I'll give you some Gemaras to look at regarding this. I gave you today a Ketzos on the list. You'll see the Ketzos draws upon this point. But that in general, a clash between a rov and a chazaka, so a rov is considered to be preferable. So here, to say that Rov does not work for Mamonis because it's against the Chezka's Mamon, so clearly something has upset the whole balance that normally would be there, not just our normal respect for the Rov, but the particular application that normally outweighs the Chazaka as well. Apparently Chezka's Mamon is of a different type, and why that is something to keep in mind also. So we discussed various approaches, and we mentioned Tosfos in Ar Masechta Bava Kamma that says the miyut is kisheino, and that we spent some significant time on yesterday, so that we won't necessarily recap now, I guess. But focus on the second, I think that's where I was asked to explain a little more, is the way Tosfos in Sanhedrin addresses it. Tosfos in Sanhedrin writes that it's this rov, the situation the Gemara has in Bava Kamma and also in Bava Basra, of a dispute over an ox. An ox was sold, and it was dangerous, and the seller says, who cares, I sold it to you to Shecht. And the purchaser said, no, I bought it in order to use it for work, so I can't have him around if he's dangerous. So who do we assume has the right to say, this is what I thought the terms were? So the Gemara in that context says, what about the fact that he could argue that Rov L'Radja, that most of the animals are sold for work? And to that the response is, Ein Holchem B'Mamanach HaRov. So Tosfos in Sanhedrin says, well, maybe that Rov of Raja is not a good Rov. So if that's the case, the way we have to read the Klal is not never holchem b'mamonach harov, that rov is useless for mamon, but rather ein holchem b'mamonach har this rov, that the rov that's under discussion in this context, that we don't follow. But theoretically, there are other situations where rov could dominate. So what's bad about the Rov of Raja? So we started to flesh out yesterday three possibilities, not all of them equally backed up or equally substantiated. The first one, I think, would be the instinctive one, but it's one that is least backed up by anything, is that maybe we're talking about numbers. That maybe there's different degrees of Rov, just like there are different degrees of Miut, that not every Miut even counts as a Miut. So we have to establish maybe there should be different standards, that some Rovs are very strong compared to other situations. So that's intuitive, but it's not backed up by anything that we find. So the other two possibilities we discussed. So one is based on the Bach. That Bach says something a little bit confusing, but he throws in the fact that essentially, just to say it in the simplest way, that there are other ways to count the Rov. Like, should we look at how many people buy oxen and say most people buy it for purposes of work? What about the fact that people who buy it for shechita purposes might buy more oxen per person? So then maybe you have a greater number of oxen being sold for shechita than you do for raja. I'm greatly oversimplifying it because it's phrased in a little bit of a confusing way. But that's the gist of it for our purposes. And whether or not that's what he means, it's the way we'll go with for our purposes. That if you have different ways to count the rov, so then doesn't that confuse things? Yes, sir.
If that's the case that people have different buying patterns and how they buy these certain oxen, wouldn't that be another way to differentiate what you bought it for?
You mean looking to how people...
I mean, if you bought 100 oxen, right, you're probably buying it for shechita purposes. If you bought one...
Maybe, and that's copy of the Gemara. It does throw out a couple of different factors and look at the price. Let's look at what this guy normally does. So there are a bunch of things like that that the Gemara mentions. So theoretically, that probably should fall in with those kinds of factors as well.
Right. So meaning, if we can differentiate in that sense, then seemingly we kind of...
Maybe. I'm saying, maybe that's not enough for us to work on. But the Gemara does throw out a couple things like that, that we should look at how much he paid. We should look at what he normally does. There are other indicators. Which, again, is relevant, right? Because, you know, that's something we should pay attention to. The fact that our Gemara gives these other things, well, are these things better than Rov? Right? We raised the question yesterday that when the Yerushalmi says, we always say, Amotzi Mechaver Lo Varaya, except for this, and this in the Gemara was when there's a Minig. So we noted that it's probably not really an exception, but it's saying that Minig counts as a Raya. So if Minig is a Raya, apparently Rov is not a Raya. But it's interesting, and I don't know how often this is pointed out, but if you look at our Gemara, so it does throw out a bunch of other factors which apparently would have worked. I said, let's look at what this guy normally does, let's look at how much money he paid, etc. So those work, but Rov not. So it sounds like these are all relevant to establishing what the more plausible reality is, but Rove apparently not. So that especially could flow with the Tostos' suggestion, Sanhedrin's Tostos' suggestion, that there's something missing about this Rove. So what is it? So the way the Bach seems to sound like, maybe it's that you could be counting the numbers differently. I mentioned yesterday as a parallel that there's a Machlokes in Yeridea between the Chavis Das, that's the author of the Nesivos, and the Noda Bihuda on one side, against the Chai Adam, that what happens to the din in the Gemara, that we can follow Rov by kosher food, that if you have 9 kosher stores and 1 non-kosher store, so if you find the piece of meat, you can assume that it came from a kosher store, because it's 9-1. But there is a Machlokes. What if there's 9 kosher and 1 non-kosher, but the non-kosher is a megastore, and as we know, non-kosher meat is so much cheaper, so it's much more abundant. So the non-kosher store sells as much meat as all the kosher stores put together. So are we only counting stores, or are we counting the meat itself? So when there are different ways to count up the rove, so that becomes confusing. And presumably it means that each rove is a little weaker because it's not the only game in town. And yesterday we gave the comparison, just to, I don't want to get involved in politics in the middle of the year, but just to give the comparison. So it happens occasionally in U.S. presidential elections, and it happened in the most recent one, that the Electoral College decided the president was one candidate, but the popular vote was the other candidate. And because in America, the way the Constitution has it, every state has a certain number of votes, and those votes are winner-take-all, so it's possible to have that. If you win enough states narrowly, then you get all of their votes, so you end up winning the election, even though it's possible that more people voted the other way. So what's the relevance? So it doesn't matter. Still, their Constitution says how to do it. So maybe there's no relevance, but part of the point is that it's brought into the discussion. Oh, so the rove that you have by winning an Electoral College, the argument is you shouldn't be so excited about it, you shouldn't get too gaivadik about it, because you should know that most people voted the other way. Now again, legally that doesn't have any relevance, but the thrust is that, oh, you see that this weakens your rove somehow. So if I have another way of coming to the rove, then don't feel so confident about your rove. So maybe that's what the Bach is saying, that when we have more than one way to calculate where this rove is in the first place, so then why should we have such confidence in the rove? And why should we say that that rove can undo a chazaka? Okay, does that make sense? So I gave you a Gemara in Kiddushin. Did you get a chance to look at that?
Right. What was the third possibility?
That's really, it's relevant to this part. Right, so if you saw the Gemara, the Gemara in Kiddushin has a discussion about savlonus, that if somebody is interested in marrying a certain girl, and she's interested in marrying him, and he sends her gifts, so do we worry that, okay, given the context of their relationship, that these gifts should count as kesef kiddushin, or do we assume, no, that they're in their own category? And the Gemara talks about whether this is the minig one way, the minig the other way. Do people usually send gifts before Kiddushin, after Kiddushin, etc.? So in that context, the Gemara talks about whether or not Rov should make a difference. So if you see the Ritva, and if you didn't get a chance, did you get a chance to see the Ritva today? So the Ritva is just helpful because he talks about a lot of things over there that are relevant. Among the points that he makes there is that this rove is not such a strong rove because, I think his language is tali beratzon of a minig, something like that, right? That it's not a rove that's inherently there, but it's a rove that could change based on what people do and trends and circumstances that are external. And therefore, that rove is not so solid. So that's how some say that that's also a pshat in Tosfos and Sanhedrin. That they use a rove like most people buy for farm work. Maybe today, but who knows what will happen tomorrow. That these are things that are very sensitive to changing circumstances. So how do you know that this is a constant rove? And that's something to also factor it. We mentioned also that Tosfos rejects the idea that we can distinguish between Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Lessa Kaman, but it is possible that other Rishonim did endorse such a distinction, or other Achronim reading other Rishonim endorse such a distinction. Those terms, I should mention, are somewhat also complicated what it means, that one interpretation sounds like a literal interpretation, that Ruba de Issa Kaman is a rove that's in front of us that we can look at and we see the numbers and we see what's going on. Well, the Ruba de Lessa Kaman, it's not something that we can really count. But it's really a form of a chazaka that, oh, people generally behave this way, and therefore we can say there's a rove like that. There are some achronim who explain, maybe Rav Shimon has like this, I don't remember exactly, some say that maybe the definition is that it depends which direction you're going in. That aruba de issa kaman counts up, it goes mi prat al haklal, that it counts up all the parts and gets a rove based on all the parts together. While aruba de lesa kaman is the other direction, that it looks at the klal and it assumes the prat can be derived from the klal. You look at society as a whole, so you assume that the individuals who are part of that society behave that way. As opposed to aruba de issa kaman, you look at actual members of society, you count them up, or you roughly count them up, and that's how you figure out that there's a rove based on looking at the parts. So two different directions. You look at the parts and figure out there's a rove, or you see that there's a rove and you look at the parts. So one is presumably stronger than the other, so it could be grounds to distinguish, even though, again, our Tosfos in both places, they don't take that approach. So it's also worth being aware. A few years ago, was anyone still here from when we learned Ksubis? So Jed remembers Ksubis, very Geshmak and Masechta. And we had this chus of learning the second parak, where some of these in Yanim come up as well. So the Gemara has a question. The discussion in the Gemara is relevant, and it's also relevant to see the Rishonim here. So maybe we'll just do it together in the interest of time. But the Mishnah, in the beginning of the second parak of Ksubis, talks about you have disputes. That you have a woman who is looking to collect the ksuba. So either she became divorced or she became widowed, so she should be entitled to a ksuba. That part is not in dispute. But the question is, how much is she entitled to? Because the ksuba for a psula is more than the ksuba for a non-psula. So when she got married, so was she a basula or not? So what if there is a dispute about that? So she claims she was a basula, and the ex-husband or the deceased husband's estate, they say, nothing doing. You were not a basula at the time, and we're only chayev the smaller ksuba. It's a significantly smaller ksuba because it's half as much, but it's also cheshbon differently, so it's a significantly smaller ksuba. So the Gemara has a whole back and forth here. It's worth seeing if you have time. That, how do we look at the facts here? So should we consider the fact that rov nashim besulos nisos, that most women who get married are besulos when they get married? Should we look to try to bring eidim? Should we look to see what people remember about the circumstances? So, just in the midst of the jump into the middle of this discussion, the Gemara in Ksubis here on Tazayim and Aleph, at the bottom of the Amud, so the Gemara says, "V'kevan derov nashim besulos nisos." Since most women get married when they are besulos, kilo also eidim I have. So, if she doesn't have eidim, so what? We know that she has the rov, that most women are besulos when they get married. So then the Gemara goes on, Ravinam Shandik Lamema, Rov Nashim Basulos Nisos and Miyut Almanos. Because, yes, Rov are Basulos, but some are Almanos, there is such a thing. We call this is Basula Yeshla Kol. That if a woman gets married as a Basula, so then people hear about it. It's a bigger party, people get the word. And top of Amud Beis, Vizu Hol Eila Kol Israel Aruba. So since people didn't hear about it, that undermines the kol. So that's, and that undermines the rov. If there's no kol, it undermines the rov. That's already interesting, right? That Gemara already is telling us something before you see any Rishonim. That on the one hand, there's a rov on her side, but the rov is somewhat weaker because there's something challenging it. The fact that we would have heard had this been true. So what about the fact that who cares, there's a rov, there's no rov, but ain't holchin b'mam menachah harov? Right, we don't look to a rov anyway, so why are we going to be motzi for her with this rov. So the Rishonim address this in different ways, and that's also instructive. So there's a Tosus here, a very short Tosus on the bottom of the Amud, Tazayin Amud Aleph. Again, if you have a chance, you should look at this tomorrow. So Tosus says, L'Rav Parach, this question of the Gemara, came in the Rov Nashim Sulas Nisos, Kileka Eidim My Heavy, who cares if there are Eidim, she has a Rov. So it says Tosus, L'Rav Parach, this is only asking according to Rav's opinion. The Isle Hocham B'Mamon Acha HaRov. Okay. So, if you look at the Tosus Rid over here. So the Tosus Rid writes, commenting on this line of the Gemara, Cave of the Rav Nashon Basulos Nisos Kiloasi Eidehim Nuna My Heavy Nizal Basa Ruba. So why don't you follow the Rav? Says the Tosfos Rid Perish V'Afal Gav Diyesh Plukta B'Hamosu. But isn't there a machlokus about this? Rabu Shmuel Perka Mocher Peros. The Rav Amar Holchem Amar Acha Harov Shmuel Amar Ein Holchem Amar Acha Harov. V'Kaimol An Halachik Shmuel. Right. So what about the fact that we paskin Ein Holchem Amar Acha Harov? So Tosfos said, well, we're going according to the other opinion. But here, Tosfos Rid is saying, doesn't want that answer. What about the fact that we passed in the other way? It says, Hacha mishum de'ika tarte ruba v'chazaka. That here there's two. Ruba v'chazaka. Hemer isha al chazkasa u'psula haisa afilu shmuel modem. That because she has the rove and she has the chazaka. Why does she have a chazaka? Because she started off as a psula. So therefore, there's a cheskes aguf that we know once upon a time she was a psula. We don't know anything to contradict that. So she also has the chazaka that she was and still should be a psula until she actually got married. I'm sorry? So that's a good question. So other Rishonim are going to bring that in on Ksubis. Let's just finish his words and then we'll address that. So he goes on to say, so so then apparently even Shmuel and Hochmah Menachah Rov would say that here this should be followed, this Rov should be followed. That's the Hav Min at least. So Ravinim Shem Dav Shalom, the Rav Nashim Psulis Nisos Mit Almanos, Rav Nis Psulish Lakol, Vizu Ho Ve'em Lakol, Israel Ruba. So that the Gemara's response to that is no, but the Rov is Shvach because we would have heard something if this was really the case. So what you see from here is that maybe the dynamics could shift according to the Tosfos. Right? According to Tosfos themselves, nothing to talk about. That if we say like Shmuel and Halcha Mamanach Harov, this whole discussion shouldn't really come up. But if you say like Shmuel, then forget about it. But according to Tosfos, Rid, no, maybe even Shmuel would agree because there's an extra factor here. The extra factor is that she has a chezkas psula. Now you ask, well, but what about that it's a chazaka dasoy lishdanos? That if you have a chazaka that by its very nature you know changes, or the circumstances by definition go from one to the other, so maybe that's not so relevant. Like the Gemara talks about a chazaka that if you measure a mikvah, and you find that you knew before that it had enough, and now it doesn't have enough. So can you assume that at earlier times it had enough? So can you go back to the chazaka that you knew at one point it was good, and stick with that? So you know, the question is, what about a chazaka that inherently is given to being changed? So maybe that itself should undermine the chazaka. And other Rishonim indeed bring that objection to this point and other points in this discussion. So it calls attention to a lot of the variables here. And of course also, you know, this is a different kind of rov and it's a different kind of chazaka. Because, like we said, a chazaka in some of our cases is simply that the money is here so we're not going to interfere. And sometimes the chazaka itself is indicative of something about the truth here. So in the case of selling of the shore, and also in this case in Ksubis, The one who's holding on to the money, it says nothing about the facts. It simply says that, okay, we're not going to mess with him because he has the money, unless we have a proof. But there's zero connection between his chezkas mammon and the reality. So it's still something of interest to us, should that matter, in the cases where a chazaka says something about what happened. So I say Judge's laptop is mine, so the fact that he's using it contradicts my claim. As opposed to these other situations where the fact that the money is in your pocket is completely irrelevant to the claim. So that's also something to think about, and that will impact on a question that we will, God willing, start with tomorrow as we then transition into some final points about this. Okay, again, thank you for putting up with the difficult schedule. I hope everyone today should stay safe and warm, and I will see you, God willing, tomorrow.
What's that?
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.